But the crazy thing is, you know, the people are what sell the products. Ultimately, when I think of watches, I think the best stories are the ones where you connect the watches to people. And if you can get the people looking good and comfortable and being themselves, you know, an authentic image is a better one than anything else. An authentic capture of someone doing their thing in their own environment, happening to wear a great watch, you know, that sells watches for me. That's what fires me up.
Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. My name is Paul Ripke. I'm a photographer, podcaster, storyteller. I do a fashion label, and mainly I'm a watch lover. And that's one of the reasons why I'm the special host of this podcast. Like Christoph Granger, the CEO of IWC, is going to talk to successful and inspiring personalities about their life and about their visions every week. I'm going to try to talk to the people behind the brand at IWC, at the watchmaking industry. I hope we're going to discover the secret behind IWC watches and the heritage behind the brand. Let's talk to an expert now. Let's dive deeper. My name is Paul Ripke. Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. Hello, everybody, and nice to have you with us or with me today. I'm going to talk in today's session with a guy. I listened to another podcast, and they called him the most optimistic man in watches. And I found some pictures of him, and on Insta, it seems like it's true. He's always smiling. He has a great personality. His name is Justin Hast, and he's based in London. And it's a no-name for watch lovers, I think, because he writes for a magazine and he has a lot of he has a blog where he writes about watches. And he's also the face of the how-to video series for IWC. So you probably have seen him. I have not talked to him. He has a lot of things in common with me, watches for sure, but also cameras, Leicas, and cycling. So I'm looking forward to, for that probably interesting conversation. I'm pretty sure it's going to be interesting. Welcome to Partners in Time with Justin Hast. Justin, what's up? Nice to meet you.
Paul, an absolute pleasure, my boy. Really is. Thanks for having me.
I just stalked you on Insta. You do very, very nice stuff. And I did, like, IWC gave me a little bit of a briefing, I would say. They gave me three words about you: watch photographer, writer, and digital marketing specialist. Is that what you put in if you check in a hotel, or what's your, how do you describe what you do by yourself? Because I'm really struggling finding a word for what I do. So what would you call yourself?
Do you know what, Paul? I think we both struggle with the same thing there, because whenever I get asked if it's like, if I'm meeting like the parents of a new girlfriend or even going into a new country and they say, what do you do? It's actually really hard to explain. And I had an incident trying to get into Marrakesh a couple of months ago, where I said I was a journalist and they didn't like it at all. And they pulled me aside and did a full cavity inspection. So I won't be saying journalist in the future. But I actually don't know what the answer is. I think a little bit like you do. I see it very much like telling stories. But also I do work in watches. You know, I think that's important. However, I also don't think it's about watches specifically. It's more about people. So I sort of go round and round in this circle.
Yeah, and it's weird, right? Just to like, I kind of started saying YouTuber because that's what people understand. And I don't do any YouTube, you know, but it kind of becomes a word for storytelling in visual media or whatever. Like, I don't have a solution yet, but we should maybe at one day we should start a petition, and then there is a new job out there, and then maybe we can license it, and then we can be the professors of that job, and then the future. Oh God, I'm getting carried away. Sorry. So, but at the end. Influencer, maybe. Like influencer is we're not fashion influencer, or you are. I am not. At the end, we influence people. You influence people, I would say. But help me out. What, like, you do that full time, right? That's your main job. So how was today? It's Thursday. It's in the afternoon. You're where exactly right now?
I'm in London. I'm in Putney, Southwest London.
Okay. Very nice. How's the weather? Rainy?
Oh, do you know what? But we had the sound check earlier and I told the team there it's, you know, they said, what's it like over there? It's just gray, unfortunately. But look, I love it. It's got a great energy. I don't know if you've been to this part of London before, but it's, it's young, it's energetic. It's on the river. So we have lots of sport going on, lots of cycling. We're next to Richmond Park. So there's lots going on. But I wonder actually if we go back, I wonder if academic could be what I call myself, because my academics were absolutely terrible at school. But maybe now we could sell ourselves as something else completely. If you're a YouTuber and you don't do YouTube, then maybe I'm a scholar, an academic. I think you know, what was I trying to say? I think that's on my website and that's on social and stuff. But honestly, it's just a passion for meeting people. It's a passion for sharing stories and getting other people enthused about life. You know, I think my interests are broader than just watches, of course. So, you know, anytime there's an opportunity to get people inspired about something, that's really where I'm at.
Okay. And how old are you?
Jeez, I just had my birthday. I'm 32.
32. Okay. Yeah. And how long are you doing this?
So I had a couple of proper jobs, after university, which meant that I was actually employed by one person, one company. Except I realized quite quick that wasn't really working. For a number of different reasons, I don't think I was well suited to be, at a desk with one business. You know, it just didn't feel quite right. So I've been doing what I do now for probably 6-7 years, maybe even longer. It was a very much a side project. It was very much like a passion story. And actually, weirdly enough, the IWC part of it is the best bit, because when the London boutique opened 6-7 years ago, 2015, I literally just arrived there. Like, I think they thought I was coming by, you know, I think they thought I was sleeping rough outside and they thought I was just coming by for some food and drink. But they couldn't get rid of me. I was just hanging around like a bad smell, asking to take photos of watches and see if there was any way I could get hands on with these things. Many years later, I've just, never gone. I've never left.
Yeah. That, same with me. That's how you end up in Formula One, by the way. But watches have always been something of interest for you, right?
Mm.
It's not like you just started it. It's a passion, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, actually. It probably goes back to being a kid, you know, on holiday when you used to be in a market. I can remember being in Turkey with my family as a kid. And one of the first things I'd end up doing is going and buying like an Adidas or a fake Adidas or a fake Nike watch from a market and just treasuring the watch for the rest of the holiday. And then on the last day, you jump in the pool and the thing breaks. that was kind of the story of growing up. Yeah. And then, of course, for my birthday, as there is always for a watch geek, there's a story about one watch. For my 21st, my father, you know, gave me this old Omega Constellation, a gold Day-Date, which I had no idea what it was. And that sort of really got me fired up. And I don't know what it was. It took me. I didn't take it.
Okay. And there's the Watch Annual is the name of the, is it a magazine or what would you call that? It's an...
It's not a hardcover. It's kind of in between. It's like not a magazine, but we call it a book. But it's somewhere in the middle.
but there is a printed version of it, right?
Yeah, there's printed. Yeah, it's only printed actually. So it's something my friend and I, James from Birch, last year came up with, and we just thought it'd be fun to try because we'd never seen anything quite like it before, and we thought it'd be fun to bring a bunch of friends in and get some great photos of some cool watches and use that as like a bookmark for the year that people can look back on for many years to come, for 2020, 2021, 2022, and see what the theme was out there in the community of watch collectors and lovers.
Okay. And that is, you're now working on 2021 version of it. So it's coming out at the end of the year so it is annual. Right?
It is. Yeah. Every year. We hope. But last year was very much a test and It was positive. So we're going to give it another go this year.
No, I do like printed products a lot. I think it's, in the world of Instagram is important, but it's going away very fast. Mm. And I like to look at photo books and I did like 13 photo books or something. So I do believe there's other people out there who like a printed and who appreciate a printed product. And at the end, because your photography is super nice. I want to talk about that. I'm giving you props for your photography. That's 10 out of 10. It seems like you're a Leica guy as well, right? Because I shot Leica the last 15 years or something. Yeah. So you are very much into that as well, right?
No, Paul, that's very kind, man. I've also done a bit of stalking on you, and I have to say your stuff is absolutely phenomenal. Stuff I could only aspire to. I think, I mean, watches were the first medium. You know, they were the first thing that got me into picking up a camera in the first place, which was actually a Fujifilm. The first camera I ever picked up was a Fujifilm. But quickly realized that one of the big reasons I fell in love with watches is because of the design. And actually, when I started digging into photography a bit more, I realized there was only one camera company that really connected with the soul, which was Leica. Shot with a Q for many years. And then actually recently moved to an SL with a 24-90 mil lens just to cover me in all environments.
What makes a good watch picture? Because I'm really not good in stills. So my pictures of watches are really, really bad. I got to admit that. I did it in 2009 and that's been like the hardest time ever with Christian Knob. We talked about it on the podcast. There's an episode about it, but we were on a boat and I had to do some, I would call it still lives of like watches laying on navigation desks and stuff like, and I struggled for real. Like I really had problems finding any, because at the end, and I'm the same, like I've been in Formula One for 4 years and I could never take a good picture of the car, which is crazy, right? Like, so I'm not, I don't feel objects. I think I have a problem understanding that. So how do I take a good watch picture? Like, cause your pictures are really good. How do we approach that?
Dude, I have to say, I remember that campaign and I know you did those shots on the boat. It was the Portuguesa, right? It was the Portuguesa collection. Yeah. And it was the guy holding up the instrument to his eye, checking out in the distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, those were some of the most seminal images. I'm not just saying it because you're here and you've paid me good money to say this, but you paid me Bitcoin to say this. No, it's just those images were really important to me in my development and passion for watches. And I remember IWC even had a magazine called Watch, which had those shots in, which I've still got on my bookshelf behind me. Ooh. Because I'm the same as you. I don't buy many things, but I love buying books and particularly photo books from architecture to design for furniture and all sorts of different things. But no, to answer your question about shooting watches, I think it's just about shooting watches more often. You know, I think what makes a good shot, just taking loads and loads of photos and you loving it. I think I've got to a point where only just now, after many, many years of failing, where I feel like I'm looking at it and thinking, you know what, that feels good to me. I've always wanted to take a shot of a watch where it kind of felt like the person looking at the photo would see that on their side table at home or their table at their dining table at home and think, oh, that looks good. You know, that looks good from a distance. Or how you see the guy or the girl across the room at the bar and you lock eyes with the watch and you're like, oh, that looks good. You know, that's the type of shot I want to take where they can feel like they're in that moment. And what does that look like? Well, I just think it's got a bit of depth to it. You know, I like things in the foreground. So you're climbing through the image to see the watch in the distance. That feels good to me.
There is a saying that there's like a saying in German saying Vordergrund macht Bild gesund, which is foreground. It's is there a saying in English language? I was always asking me that. Like, so if you put something in the foreground, like out of focus, you know, it gives you perspective.
Mm.
Is there some sort of rule with a stupid nameplay? No, probably not.
No,
right?
not really.
The first joke in history that Germans are ahead of British people, right? just to point it out.
Dude, I give you that one. I hadn't heard of that. But I can see it totally. I mean, it's so important. It's so important. Anything to give you some depth, anything to give, you know, light is obviously important. I think reflections, like you had trouble with the cars, like the Formula One cars. Reflections are obviously a huge problem for cars and for watches. So how did you overcome that? How did you decide? Did you ever get to a point where you're like, I need to be here shooting this car to make it look good?
Me, no. I never took pictures of cars. Like I tried it a couple of times and they were really, really bad. And so I stick to the people. My job was always the people, the drivers, the mechanics, the team, the CEOs, whatever. Like, I was not the car photographer. They actually had another guy who was the car photographer who was not. And I was, that's probably, one of the most proudest, articles about me is like some Motorsport, Newsweek, whatever. And the headline was meet the Mercedes photographer who can take pictures of cars. I kind of like that, you know, to be hired by a car brand, but I'm not, I really don't have a talent for that.
But that's
because I care about people. I think I have a little talent of making people look good or at least positive or emphatic or whatever. but I'm not the best if it's about things. Same with furniture or architecture or whatever. Like, I'm really not good at that.
Mm. But the crazy thing is, you know, the people are what sell the products. Ultimately, when I think of watches, I think the best stories are the ones where you connect the watches to people. And if you can get the people looking good and comfortable and being themselves, you know, an authentic image is a better one than anything else. An authentic capture of someone doing their thing in their own environment, happening to wear a great watch, you know, that sells watches for me. That's what fires me up.
Yeah. You got to ask IWC about this, but at the end, I mean, that's what we did with that stuff that the film we did and everything. I do agree on that. Like, I do believe that social media is for, yeah, social, for people. You got to connect with people and you want to be inspired by some path of ways. So the only thing I could provide with the film I did or the stuff I do for them is me. That's the only thing I can provide, you know, like, I can't provide any insights into watchmaking because I don't have any. I don't know anything about watches in depth as Chris does or anybody else. So why should I even try to play in that kind of sports? And it works good so far, like on my side, but that's also social media. I'm just getting the positive feedback and the negative, it gets like, nobody was hating on the IWC thing so far, at least on my side. But I do see the watch industry, like probably a couple of people say, like, why are we talking about this beardy guy in Newport Beach? What the hell does this has to do with, and if he's going camping, why? I want to see the big pilot, but I do believe it's, yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, but you've got as much, this is the one thing I've got a problem with in the watch industry is that, you know, there's quite a lot of, there's quite a lot of ego at times for people who may have been around for a long time and people throw around their knowledge as if it's like a badge of honor. And of course it's a learning process, you know, that getting to understand watches at a deep level is a beautiful art over years, but you've got as much right to have a comment on what color Big Pilot you like versus me. I mean, there's no difference between the two of us. And, you know, I think that's wicked. And you know, I think it's all positive I think IWC are a step ahead of maybe some of the others in the industry in the sense that they focus on people. And I can always remember seeing some cool videos in the past they made where you've got like a super cool dude making surfboards, wearing a Big Pilot and talking about why he loves it. And that sells me the dream.
Totally. Me too. Like, that's exactly what I made. And at the end, like, I'm running the IWC Journal account right now. And in the DMs, there were some old people who were not super happy with it. And honestly, if they're not happy with it, it's good, because change is good. You know, like, the news stories, younger people, guys like us, and we're not attracted by 70-year-old IWC forum guys that talk the same thing about a reference number 170814 or whatever, you know, like, so I was attracted by that surfboard shaper and I really like that as well. And the selection of the people, I mean, Billy Munger and stuff, like, that's real cool stories that IWC selects. And I'm very much open for that. And it's cool that they work with you as well, because, like, you're also not a 52-year-old perfect, like, with a monocle, talking about forums and internet troll, whatever. So you do other stuff, and you do work for a lot of other brands, right? Like, so you do some fashion stuff as well, right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, firstly, I came to it all with no background at all in photography professionally or even writing. You know, I got my English teacher when I sent him a few magazines where articles went, and he was like crying with laughter. He was like, how's this guy been able to print any written word or anything? Cause he could barely spell when I looked after him at school. So, you know, honestly, it's been a fun journey. But I did start really, I started writing actually for Monochrome magazine, which is out of the Netherlands, really cool publication, digital publication, and then Revolution magazine. And Revolution, of course, is sistered with the Rake magazine. So I got the opportunity to meet some real fashionistas in the office and some guys who got me inspired about cuts of suits and fabrics and other things. So, you know, there was opportunities to cover some really cool stories there that weren't necessarily, you know, watch geek related. And then, of course, with watches, you get to get involved in other things. So I love golf. I got to been able to do some really cool golf projects and motorsport. luckily watches have this ability to transcend lots of different genre and industries. And so you get to dive into lots of different worlds. And I mean, yeah, I can remember some of my favorite experiences being at like motor events with like bikers, where we were interviewing bikers about the watches they wore and why. And I just found that fascinating.
It's super nice. I mean, it's a dream job, how it sounds like.
It is. I don't feel like I didn't go full time for a first couple of years on it, but, you know, IWC were, you know, the first to give me the confidence and space to be able to consider this as a full-time opportunity. And, you know, predominantly I do stuff with IWC on a project basis when the opportunity arises, but I also do love the opportunity to cover things like the Concours d'Elegance for Lange, another Richemont Group brand, or even do some social imagery for Vacheron. So I typically like to keep within the Richemont Group and at different sectors of the market, because I think that there's a bit for everybody there. The watches are a very broad church, right? So, you know, they can appeal to lots of different pockets and lots of different types of people. So it's really good fun. It's really broad. And I think it's a really interesting time to be in the industry as well, as we see this sort of fragmentation going on in the media side of things, where brands are becoming retailers and media outlets are becoming brands and retailers. Yeah. And brands are becoming media outlets. So it's this really fascinating time of change.
A lot. Yeah. I totally agree. Like the Mr. Potter thing is the same. Like it's, I was quite surprised I saw that, and you were involved in it, right?
Yeah, the recent launch was killer. I mean, I've been a fan of Mr. Porter for many years. Being here in London, they've always had really strong visibility. I think it's London and New York that seem to really take off for them in the early years. It's crazy to think it's only been 10 years, actually. But no, this chronograph that they launched with IWC was massively successful, and a credit to both brands and the power of both brands, and also, you know, the excitement people have to wear watches now that maybe have that versatility to them. You know, I think we're seeing a lot of guys maybe getting a watch that they can wear in lots of different environments. In a bronze case, killer watch, gets better with age.
Totally, I love it. I really, really love it, and I love the textile part of it, especially. I love the wristband, to be honest, and that's one of the questions I wrote down actually before ahead of this, because IWC, because like we now did this film with me, and everything is sort of we're gonna work on it. We do some podcasting, we do here and there, but they gave me a little task. They said like, you can change the wristband if you want. You can do a remix of the Big Pilot for yourself, like if you find a creative way of designing or using different material or extra material. And so far I'm really not I didn't have a single idea about it, and I was not inspired. Like I kept looking at other wristbands and what other brands do and what's out there, but so far my inspiration board for IWC, let's say Paul Ripke's wristband Big Pilot remix, it's very empty. There's nothing on there.
Dude, I tell you what you need to do. I've got an idea for you.
Help me.
No, because your colors, what I love is you've got these flamboyant colors, you know, these pinks and these vintage feel. You know, what do they call it? Tie-dye,
and there's, at the end, it's turquoise, lilac, and very lemon haze, we call it. It's like a bright lemon.
So you've got to go down that avenue a little bit like, you know, so I think you should take the Mojave strap, the Mojave Big Pilot that's just come out.
I like that a lot.
A light sort of, because you've got the US vibes going on, you're in California, the sandy feel, and then you need to add those bright colors to it, I think, to have some fun with it, because the strap is where you got to have fun with it. Bring it to life a little bit, because we don't see many straps out there that have, you know, multi-color to them, I think. That would be really fun. I mean, I get a lot of joy in socks. One of my passions is colored socks. And I think if you were to have a little bit of fun with that strap, bringing those colors to life, your own DNA, your colors, that would be killer.
Help me. Like, I have probably the most stupid question. Is the width of this, like how wide the strap is that different between 40, 46, 43, 41? Like, Is that the same size?
Yeah.
As straps?
No, they do. They do change. So depending on the lug width, which is dictated by the case size, that will impact on the strap that you go for. But you wear a big pilot most of the time. So of course that new strap, that Mojave strap, that light colored sand one, that would
43,
fit.
43, right?
No, this one's 46 actually. So this would still fit you. This would still fit you.
Okay.
So you could use that strap. And then I say, just have a bit of fun with some paints on there and bring it to life a little bit. That would be, that would be my pick.
My problem is normally when I design in like, I'm not really a designer, but the way I do clothing is I buy a couple of samples. I go to markets, I buy stuff and then I copy or remix it sort of, you know? So I'm having a little trouble buying 15, 20K watches for sampling.
I think there is a big market for straps. You know, I think the sort of aftermarket for straps, guys who make just straps for different brands, that's kind of exploded in the last few years. And like this year, we've seen this huge trend for green dial watches. A couple of years ago, there was this huge trend for green strap watches. And there was aftermarket prices for these green rubber straps from different brands kind of going nuts online, where they were paying crazy money for these aftermarket straps. So no, it's a big market, but I wouldn't buy. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you went on Alibaba, you'd be able to find a bunch of test fabric straps to do some painting on.
that's one rule. I'm not producing in China, to be honest. Like that's something, because I can't control quality. So yeah, either doing US or Europe. So Alibaba is out for me, unfortunately, but I'm going to find something in Turkey maybe.
Yeah.
Cause I do believe, I think it's important. And I had a call, I had a long talk about sustainability and stuff. And one of the takeaways was where you produce stuff is really determines like where it is. So that was super interesting how IWC things also where they produce stuff. Right.
I definitely wouldn't, not only the quality issues from that particular market, yes, but also the ethical issues, of course, are very prominent right now. So no, I'd stick with, you know, good local quality if possible, but it's become a big thing, and as it should do. You know, we're all conscious of our impact, and I it's great to see IWC talking about their straps in a manner which gives people visibility on their impact. And you know, the watch itself is inherently such a sustainable thing that it feels wrong that the peripheral, the strap, the case, the box, the papers, all of those other bits and pieces aren't necessarily sustainable. So it's good that we're moving towards, you know, more conversation around that, because that's very, very important, I think.
Okay, so I have a straight up question. Can you be my strap counsel?
Yeah.
Is that, can you help me out doing that? Can I send you over or whatever? Like, can we maybe create that together? That would be...
Oh,
I need
man.
Help.
Oh yeah, that would be great. I would love that. A three-way joint between you, IWC and I would be killer. I'd love that. I'd love that. Okay. I'd hold you to it.
Because you are a style counsel at Mr. Porter, right?
But just wait, Paul. That does not mean that I've got any taste. That doesn't mean I've got any taste. So don't come looking at me for any style tips.
Come on. But what do you do? What, like, what's that? What is a Mr. Porter style counsel? Like, I want to know that.
Well, I did, when the news came through, it was a complete surprise a couple of months ago, maybe. Just got this email and it just said, congratulations, we've invited you to the council if you'd like to take part. And I instantly thought back to this moment when I was at university, and I've shared this with Chris before, actually. We talked about it briefly, but I didn't get any awards growing up at school for academics. Sport was different. Okay. I got a few awards for sport, but never for academics. And in this instance at university, the only award that I ever got was the worst dressed in my college, in my halls of residence. There was 400 of us, maybe 450 of us in our halls. And I got this, in fact, they built it up and they said, you know, this was the big award at the end of the year. They said, we've never given this award before, but we've created it this year for one man and one man only. And Justin, well done. We've seen the look that you've been rocking for the last year at breakfast every morning at 6 a.m. And it was a Tom Brady American football top. It was some Hawaiian Billabong shorts, which would have been amazing down in Manhattan Beach or somewhere near you. They were orange with flowers on. And then some Moroccan slippers, these market slippers that I got, which were slip-on. But unfortunately, they hadn't been looked after very well. So they were a little bit rough around the edges, but that was my look for the mornings. And they always thought it was just horrendous. So they gave me the worst dressed award, which I've still got up on the wall, which I'm really proud of. But you know, honestly, Paul, I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to the award from a supporter. I mean, I've always, you know, when it comes to clothing, I've always appreciated the everyman, the guy in the street or the woman in the street who has that confidence to rock whatever they want to rock. You know, same with watches. If you see someone that's just bossing it in their own way, that gets me going and that gets me fired up. As far as my own look, I've always felt like I'm sort of relaxed, classic slash sort of surf vibes, because I like a Converse shoe. I've always gone for a Converse shoe. I like Stance socks, which you can surf in, or surfing, skateboarding, surfing vibes. And I've always liked a chino. So quite a sort of proper pair of trousers. And then I've always loved an overshirt, like a work shirt. Have you come across Drake's on Savile Row here in London? They're my sort of favorite go-to menswear store for work wear. But that's kind of my uniform. I get off on this idea of the uniform, you know, like Steve Jobs and others had their uniform. That's kind of my uniform. So I'm not too formal. But I feel like it can transfer us across any environment that I seem to find myself in.
And is it, but you're still rocking that outfit for breakfast, right? The other one. The Tom Brady.
The Tom Brady shirt. Yeah, the Patriots, Tom Brady. So this tells you how long ago it was. You know what? I wish I could say I was, but unfortunately, I think I had to sell that one. I think I was told to eBay those off. So those are gone, unfortunately. A real shame.
Who told you that?
I think it was a girlfriend's mother-in-law at the time. She said, look, she pulled me aside once and said, look, this at dinner, this is not going to work for my daughter. I'm afraid we're going to have to do something here. So she made me sell it on eBay, which I still resent her for to this day. And we broke up many years ago.
And look at you now. You're at Mr. Porter's Style Council. You should go back there and said, like, here. You should throw the award into her face on the door and just go back.
I'll post it through the envelope, the letterbox and leave. No, but in all seriousness, Paul, it's a real honor. I mean, looking at the guys in that list, I can't help but feel like an imposter. I mean, it's an amazing group of guys. And, you know, I think if we're able to get together on a great platform like Mr. Porter and be part of helping guys build their confidence and you know, tell stories about great adventures and overcoming failures. I mean, that's what I'm excited about. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. I have two more questions. The big pilot, I'm wearing it. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing it. I was surfing last week and I did wear it while surfing. That worked sort of out. Like, I think the strap I need to change. I do wear it while cycling. You're a cyclist too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I'm having trouble wearing it while golfing. That's the only sport where I'm struggling. What do I do? What do you do? You do all three sports as well, right?
Yeah. Well, Paul, I have to say cycling is something I love, but I'm not a great cyclist because I'm not a mountain goat. That's for sure. I've just weighed in this morning at 100 kgs. So I'm not a mountain goat, maybe more of a sprinter, but I do love just being outside in any environment, whether it's surfing, training outside, golf. So the answer to the question for golf is you really shouldn't wear a mechanical watch playing golf, if possible, because the impact that you cause on the movement is, you know, maybe the shock absorber, maybe the new Big Pilot shock absorber would be better suited for golf. I think, you know, look, the golf watch is probably one for, you know, I find a lot of joy in having the little pouch that you see the pros put their watch in before they tee off, putting it in your bag. And then when you finish, you put it back on your wrist, and then you're good for the bar and for the party afterwards once you've won and the guys are buying you dinner. That's my advice for golf. So I don't tend to wear it, but cycling for sure. I mean, I did speak to Patrick Seabass the other day, and he was talking about wearing a Big Pilot cycling. And I just think these things are made to be worn, and I want people to wear watches wherever they can. But I just think golf is one of those places where it's a little bit more difficult to get it across the line.
Totally agree. So I'm the same in cycling. We should go cycling. And my motto is look pro, go slow. So I have very great equipment, saving every single inch and ounce of weight. Not only like on the bike, I'm paying a lot of money for like carb and stuff. And it would be way easier to just lose 20 kilos, which is pretty much what I'm too big or too heavy. But hey, so I'm really enjoying it, but I'm going slow.
What do you ride? What's your bike? What's your setup?
I have a Focus bike. Like I did start with Canyon, which I like a lot. Like I like the approach of Canyon, but now I'm riding a Focus bike because we do a collab. We have like a Paris X Focus bike. My best moment in my life was, so I'm doing tires with Schwalbe. That's like a tire producer, and we do a signature tire in the colors you were talking about of Paris, you know? So we work with them, and then it was, we now do the second year together, and the CEO was like, yeah, we like that. And it's interesting. I just want to let you know, like you're the first athlete, that we do work another year. And I said, like, athlete? Did you just call me athlete? Can I call myself an athlete? Is this really? Because that's kind of they want to put me into like some sort of system, and in their system, I'm an athlete. So I'm a sponsored athlete, active cyclist, which doesn't go further than 15 miles an hour
Is that your LinkedIn? Is that your LinkedIn title currently?
Oh yeah. I'm not on LinkedIn, actually. Should I go on LinkedIn? Are you on LinkedIn? Is that something that's probably important in business?
I haven't checked in for many years, but I think you should have that as your title. That's your current role and only role as athlete. Just athlete. No need for any description anymore. Just athlete.
It is totally, yeah. I agree.
But it's funny you should say that, because I do love, I actually love CrossFit, and I know there is some cultural, some cultural significance people have to that. I appreciate it. But one of the funny things is you always get a CrossFit, you get a shirt saying athlete, whether you're weighing 26 stone or in the best condition of your life. So it is funny how, you know, athlete is thrown around all over the place. And I do love that. It's like the finisher's shirt. It's like everyone who finishes get a shirt. Great.
What watch do you wear during workouts? Like if you do CrossFit?
Honestly, Paul, I'm actually so focused on just not dying that I don't even have a watch on the wrist. And anyone who trains with me will tell you my mental arithmetic is very poor. So my rep counting is very poor. And also the timing is very poor. Knowing how far through we are or how long we've got left is not good. So I don't even wear one. You know, I actually love the clock that we have, this big rogue clock up on the wall that counts you down and you can look up and see it. But I never, it's funny, isn't it? You know, in life, we have that instantaneous response where we check our wrists to see the time. I think when you're training, you've just got this instantaneous like hope in the heart. Has this bloody clock come down in time? If I look up on the wall, please tell me that we're coming to the end of this. And that's all I keep thinking when I'm training.
So it's not a love relationship with the time in that kind of specific moment, right?
No, but it's funny. Afterwards, it is. You know, afterwards, it is. It's a great time in the day. I love it. It's like a ritual every morning. Yeah. So, but the watch goes on as soon as I come home. That's for sure.
That's good. So the world is opening up right now. You probably seem like a guy that likes to travel, right? Mm. Where are you going first?
Oof. So there's a couple of places that I love. My best buddy lives in New York, and I miss the man a lot. And it's not quite the same talking on Zoom. So I'm really looking forward to getting out to New York, and he's in Brooklyn out there, and he's running a cool business himself. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting out to New York. Although I don't miss the city sort of fumes and smells and stuff, but we'll be outside of the city. So New York. And then of course I do, I work with a crazy cool auction house called Brun Rasmussen in Denmark. And I go out there and see them every month. So I'm really excited about getting out to Copenhagen. I love the way of life out there, the people, the most beautiful people on earth in Copenhagen. Physically, mentally, emotionally, beautiful chairs. I've fallen in love with Danish design over the years.
Chairs.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. I've got posters up on my wall of chairs. I know that's strange. Like guys come in and they're like, "Dude, where's the Pamela Anderson posters?" But there's no Pamela Anderson posters. Just Danish design Hans Wegner chairs on the wall.
They all get older, you know.
So Denmark is really close to my heart. So Copenhagen, and then I do love I love Marrakesh as well. I travel a lot to Marrakesh and stay in the same place all the time.
Where are you staying?
Beautiful little hotel, Dar Islan, maybe 10, 15 rooms. It's like an oasis. You walk in, it's like you're transported to a whole nother world. So Those are probably
downtown or outside.
It's outside of the outside of the wall of the old town. It's just in the. It's near McDonald's in Galiz, if anyone's ever been. It's near Galiz, which is the sort of French quarter. So,
okay.
Yeah, man, really excited. Where's your first trip booked? Have you got anything booked?
I've just been to Hawaii last week because we can travel inside the US. So, but I'm not sure. I'm I'm. That's why I'm asking. Like, I'm open for that. And that inspiration wall is also very blank. But I do wanna. Like, I realized going to Hawaii how much I miss traveling, how much I miss new people, new places, seeing new stuff. And I went alone, which is, you know, I have a family, I have a wife, three kids, but I kept doing that. Like every month I go a couple of days alone somewhere. Mm-hmm. And before I went to cities, I visited countries. I very much like my best friend, he's a rapper, and we did together. We pretty much lived 15 years just chasing country points. Like if you stay in one country overnight, then you get the country point for that. Like not on the airport, you need to really visit that country. So and we tried to never repeat ourselves and go to places where we've already been. We wanted to go to new places. So we did that very, very much. And I kind of stopped it the last 5, 6, 7 years because we moved to the US. You're living all of a sudden at a nice place. You know, before I was living in Germany and I had a little push to leave that country sometimes for a couple of days. Now it's like, oh, I live in paradise. It's super nice where I live and I'm really happy here. So I'm not, yeah, there's no big urge to leave. But I put myself, so I have 92 countries and I want to do 100. I want to get to 100 this year. So, and that's, but it's not easy. Like it's not, I gotta, like it's Belize, for example. Like I gotta, there's not a lot left now because like the big ones are already Panama and whatever and Costa Rica and everything. So, yeah. And Africa is, I really like Central Africa and I'm not sure when it's safe to go there, but that's probably what changed me most, traveling to Uganda or, like Central Africa is insane. And I really like the people there and it's, truly, truly, truly inspiring going there. I think personally, but
Tudor, I have to say that is an incredible approach. And yeah, I would love to pick up on that. I don't know how you've managed to sell it to your wife and children that's the deal. But that's an amazing thing to do. And actually,
it's quite easy. Like she's saying yes to that.
She's saying yes.
Yeah, she's preferring 3 weeks of a balanced Paul to 4 weeks of an unbalanced Paul. You know.
Wow. So, good man. And I totally agree with you with Africa. Cause actually I was born in South Africa and I came over here to the UK with my folks. And there's something just very, very special in the air in Africa, whether it's the early mornings, the sounds, the people, the humility. No, I've not done much.
Where are you born in South Africa?
I was born in Durban. Durban. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's Garden Route, end of Garden Route, right?
Yeah, I used to go back a lot to see family, but in the last few years I haven't. But it's a very, very special place, and I too would love to do more of Africa because I haven't done that yet. But
it's been whoever worked for me is because I ran a photo studio, and before the application talks, I asked them what's the capital of South Africa. That was my question to enter the application talks. You know.
So, I bet that stumbled a few people.
Yes, it did. And same with Brazil, by the way, and same with Australia. So it's like once you figured it out, like it's different. But yeah, so yeah, I want to go back. Like I've spent some very, very nice time in Johannesburg, Joburg. I really like it, but and Camps Bay and stuff. It's amazing. Africa is a nice country.
Have you been to Japan?
Yes,
I would love to do Japan. I'd love to do Japan. Yeah. Never been. That's big up Osaka. On my list. Yeah.
Osaka is the place you need to go to. I was like, Tokyo is, I personally think Tokyo is too big and it's super hard to understand. And if you don't have local friends, which in my case, I don't, in Tokyo, it's just overwhelming, I think personally, but Osaka was totally opposite and a new city. I was not aware of that. Like a friend of mine played soccer there and Kobe, very, very close to it. And so we stayed in Osaka and we went a couple of, it's an insanely impressive city. I was blown away by architecture and stuff in Osaka. Like, I did not know this existed. That's, if you're in Japan, go to Osaka. It's really, really, really nice.
Okay, I'm making a note as you speak.
Totally. Totally. We could go on and on, but we're at the end of this already.
No.
Because we are. We recorded already 43 minutes. So I'm up for my but I have last questions. So I always write down last questions, and mm-hmm. it's kind of repetitive for everyone. But with you, I want to know all three questions, because I'm interested in all answers. I can't decide which one. So first one, what was your first watch? The one your father gave you? Was that your first watch, or what was your first watch that you personally owned?
Yeah. So the first watch was the Omega Constellation, 1968. And that was a gift, and that's with me now and will be with me forever. The first,
who gifted that?
That was from my dad, actually. Okay. Yeah. He actually knew nothing about it. He knew his father wore it, but I never got the opportunity to meet any of my grandparents on either side. So this was my only memory of my grandfather in South Africa who wore this. But then the first watch, that I ever bought myself actually was an IWC, Aquatimer. It was a white dial Aquatimer. And I beg, borrowed, and stole every penny I could. I did some bad things for that watch. I remember getting it and just falling in love with it. And I was just so proud of it. And wore it for many years. And then traded it for another IWC. So I had some good years out of it.
That's great. That's great. And regarding time, what would you have more time? Would you like to have more time in your life right now? Like, what's something that you're not doing because you don't have enough time? What would you like to do more, you personally, whatever it is?
Yeah, it's actually not because of the lack of time, I don't think, but it's the constriction, as we've talked about, the travel. I've really fallen in love with film photography. And whenever I go away, the one thing I promised myself a few years ago was, a few of my friends were printing their film shots. And every time I went away, I promised myself I'd print one image from the trip that encapsulized the trip. And I absolutely loved it. Even the process of taking the film to the guys in London here to get processed. Yeah. And so I think it's that thing. And this is not watch related. This is like the last shot I got was actually in Lugano in Switzerland, of the hotel and the lake. And it's just, every time I look at it, it just makes me want to travel and take more film photos. So that is the one thing I'd like to be doing more of. But I'd really love to get a new Leica film camera. So if anyone has any recommendations on a great Leica film camera that's easy to use, that would be really cool.
Leica R4 is the one. It's cheap also. Like I'm shooting on it. It's a film camera. There's tons of it because it's one of the most used cameras. There's cheap lenses for it. Buy one lens, one camera, and Leica R4 is perfect.
Boom, Paul. Thank you, boy. That's it.
And it's affordable. It's not crazy, crazy expensive. That's one of the things too. Because like you can spend 15 grand on a film camera.
But you want to take it out and smash it about when you travel, so you don't want to care too much. So thank you. That's boom. I'm having that. I'm buying that later.
Yeah. And then last question. If you could have stopped time once in your life, like, what moment would that have been? Like, if you could have said, okay, stop it here. Sort of, what's been the best moment of your life so far? What's been the highlight? I know Mr. Porter style counsel, but besides that,
No. As we talked about already, you know, it's all about people. It's all about people. And they are the reason that I get so excited about life, is the people around me. And I can't help but think about a moment that happened many years ago now, when my buddy, who was the guy who's in New York, he was in California. He went to UCLA, and he called me and another buddy here in London and said, look, guys, spring break, you've got to come out. It's going to be wild. We're going on a cruise. There's going to be thousands of other kids from the universities out here. You've got to come. And so we put all of our cash together, and we got two flights out to go and visit him out there. And there was one particular moment where, you know, you know those vivid memories where the smell even is with you and the warmth of the car. We were driving in this rental car down the PCH from Malibu down to LA or wherever. And I just couldn't believe how close the water came to the motorway. And we had fun. We Are Young. That song had just like blown up. And we had that song on full volume, and we were just giving it some, like full on giving it some out the car, windows down, couldn't hear anything, just finished school, finished university, had the craziest week ever, and just really appreciating being alive. That's it.
We need to stop talking. I'm going to go in the car and try to recreate that moment, because I could feel it. You talking about it, I could literally feel it. So thank you very much for that. We need to stop now, and I'm going to try to ride down PCH to Malibu and play that song and repeat. I'm going to send you a video in a second.
Oh, please, boy, please.
Because
please.
That sounds like a perfect moment to stop time. It's you're totally right. Thank you very much. It's been super interesting. It's been way too fast. I could have talked 5 more hours with you. It's super interesting what you do, and let's stay in contact. And I'm being honest. Please help me out with that strap thing, because I'm hitting problems, and I need your help.
If we don't do the strap, in fact, don't contact me again until we have the agreement ready to sign for the joint strap venture. That's the next step. That's our next step. Yeah.
I'm having my lawyer prepare the paperwork. My lawyer is me, actually. I'm sending out a WhatsApp voice message to you right now.
Good. Okay. No, thank you so much.
Let's do that. Yeah. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it. And have a great evening.
You too, boy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My dear listeners, thanks for your time. If you can't wait for the next episode, or maybe you want to know more about IWC, the unique watches, or the heritage of the brand, please check out the website of IWC or find IWC on social. Their handle is IWC Watches. Other than that, I'd love you to have you guys back for the next episode. If you don't want to miss it, subscribe to this podcast, then you're never going to miss out on any upcoming episodes. See you later. My name is Paul Ripke. Thanks for your time.